Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' I'm Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. Happy President's Day. It's February 15th. For those of you who are listening via the download and the podcasting, and you're listening to this after the fact, you're listening to the February 15th President's Day broadcast. Good to have you with us. As always, we have got a jam-packed schedule today and a lot to talk about. We have a special guest back by popular demand, Glenn Corso. And we are thrilled to have him on and talking about so many important issues that are going on. But as we start out each week, let's go to the beginning or at the top of the program. Let's go to rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with us every week. What's going on last week, this week, and moving forward?
Well, the markets are closed today for President's Day, as you mentioned. So we'll talk a little bit about last week. Had a pretty interesting week last week, all in all. MBS prices fell a bit, about a quarter of a point, which caused mortgage yields or rates to go up just a little bit. But, you know, we keep being driven by things that are sort of out of the ordinary, sometimes off the radar screen. 2 weeks ago, you'll remember we had a little bit of a rally when the debt in Greece and Spain was, their ability to repay that was considered a concern, and a default on that sovereign debt was a big thing and kind of created a flight to safety where people sold off their stocks because you never know how it's all going to play out. So they sold their more risky investments like stocks and bought the safer investments like government-guaranteed mortgage-backed securities. We saw a nice little improvement in price because of that that event. Well, this week it kind of turned around, and Germany and other European nations pledged support for the debt of Greece and lifted some of the concern, and that flight to safety that we saw the week before reversed itself during the week, and that was that caused mortgage prices to go lower and rates to go higher. But then also we had the 10 and the 30-year Treasury auctions on Wednesday and Thursday respectively, and neither auction was very well received by investors. Yields went up. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this. It's been a concern. And, neither had very solid bid-to-cover ratios, and the foreign participation in both the auctions were relatively low. And that spilled over into the mortgage-backed security market, where prices were hurt somewhat, and yields rose, rates rose. And so those two things happened earlier in the week. But then on Friday day, we had another little jolt from a foreign an overseas event where Thursday night late China announced that they were causing their banks to have to hold more reserves. And the idea the idea behind that was to try to cause the growth that's accelerating in China at pretty robust rates to slow down. And when they slow things down, they slow down purchases, which slows down the ability for U.S. companies to sell to China. So that spilled over into the stock market, causing the stocks to fall. And again, we saw a little bit of a choice to get out of one investment and into another in mortgage-backed security prices. Government-guaranteed Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie mortgage-backed security prices improved. So net-net, it was a down week for prices and causing rates to be a little higher, but not all too bad.
Glenn, real quick on that note, a lot of people are confused with why MBS prices improved. While it was bad for stocks, we understand the countercyclical nature of that, but explain a little bit more of why China's position actually helped MBS prices.
Well, it was because China is such a big importer of goods and services from the U.S., the ability for the U.S. to recover has two impacts. One is it means that there'll be less supply and demand issues, and therefore potentially it should be less inflationary concerns in the future. And so that's the less the inflation, the lower the growth, the less the inflation, the lower rates can be and still be on a net-net basis after taking inflation into consideration, the returns can still be the same. And then the other thing is the counter-cyclical aspect of the stock market, where you see people
right.
that have invested in stocks that are predicated on growth and building revenue and profitability. They get out of those stocks and into safer investments. But you know, it's hard to say which was the more direct of the two. I got to believe it's the reduced impact on the supply and demand features of the economy, which has a lower inflationary pressure.
Yep, I imagine. Let's didn't mean to take you off there. I just several people were asking about that earlier. Let's talk about Fed Chairman Bernanke. He got
yeah.
snowed out, but his speech got published. What
his
about
speech,
that?
He came out with this was his planned presentation before one of the committees, I think it was the House Financial Services Committee, to discuss what the Fed's plan is to exit the very easy monetary policy and these very special programs that they have in place, like the MBS purchase program, in order to get the government sort of out from the things that they did when they felt like the recession was such that it needed all that help. And so, you know, there's been a lot of money put into the economy. There's, you know, $1.2 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities are being purchased, and all that's being funded with money that was created. A lot of the TARP money, a lot of this money is not money that they sucked out of the economy by selling debt. It was just created by making money. So they're in a situation where they need to bring some of that liquidity back in, and or at least leave that, keep that liquidity from being a stimulus to economic growth. Once we get there, you know, we're not there yet, but at some point they're gonna choose to tighten policy, and there are four or five things they can do to cause some of that liquidity to be taken from the market. One of which is to sell the mortgage-backed securities that they've purchased. Now,
mm-hmm.
when they do that, they're going to add a tremendous supply into what might not be a very large demand. The appetite for that much in mortgage-backed securities could be devastating to rates.
Yes.
If they sold them too quickly, if they sold them when there was no demand from buyers. And so what the mortgage industry was watching for in the Bernanke comments was will they announce what their plans are regarding the sale of those mortgage-backed securities? And fortunately, they put them sort of at the bottom of the list of things that they would plan to do as they're tightening the economic policy. Which says, and all this is predicated upon not beginning to do anything until the economy is on stronger footing. So I think the industry heard that things are going to be pushed out a good bit, and that selling of mortgage-backed securities right away is not something that they can expect the Fed to do. So
that's great news. I mean, they're dumping $1 trillion of mortgage-backed securities from the last purchases, you know, would just compete so much for the dollars we badly need coming in, especially as we watch the Feds wind down their interest. Is there, and what you're reading out there, Joe, is there any indication the effect of the Feds backing away from the MBS markets in March, at the end of March?
You know, there's been lots of opinions both ways. Some people pretty much nobody's saying that mortgage-backed security prices will improve or rates will fall from where
right.
they are. So it's a question of will they stay the same or will they go up, and if they go up, will they go up by a tremendous amount or a small amount? I think that there's got to be pressure to push rates a little bit higher because we're losing the buyer of the majority of mortgage-backed securities issued right now. There are buyers that have been sitting on the side. They're going to wait and see what happens when the Fed stops buying. Is there, it's going to be hard to buy in front of the Fed totally exiting because you don't really know what the market reaction is going to be. So,
correct.
There's a good chance that rates will go up some, but I don't think it's going to be a catastrophic rise in rates.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people out there, and the markets are nervous. Let's talk as we wrap up this segment. Let's get into what's happening this week. I know we've got the inflationary data, PPI, CPI. What's some of the others? Why don't you run through the calendar this week and how significant probability for volatility do we really have?
Yeah, the most significant comes at the end of the week when CPI and PPI are announced. PPI on Thursday and CPI on Friday. Wednesday, the Fed minutes are going to be released, but there's been so much interaction in the press and statements by the Fed that we'd be hard pressed to find a market moving statement in those minutes this time around. Housing starts also is on Wednesday, and then a couple manufacturing indexes and industrial production round out the week. But really, the big part is going to be the CPI and PPI toward the end of the week.
And what are they projecting? What's projected at this point?
Well, we've got
for PPI and CPI.
Yeah, it's still very tame. I mean, PPI, is somewhat more volatile, and you've got core PPI and you've got the full PPI. So core PPI is still a very, very tame. They're expecting a 0.1% increase in prices. The full-in PPI they're expecting a significantly larger claim as the cost of food and energy impact that primarily energy. CPI, core of a plus 0.2%, full of plus 0.3%. So still these rates of inflation are very well within what's considered acceptable levels of inflation.
Glenn, thank you so much. Excuse me, I'm thinking of Glenn Clorso coming up in the next segment. Sorry about that, Joe. Joe, thank you so much for bringing this to us this week again, as you do. And, of course, for those of you who know, MBS Quote Line is a service that's out there for all of you. It's a great service. We look at it every single day. Appreciate those updates you're giving us and emailing us out. We'll be right back after this break. And remember, we got Glenn Corso on in the program to talk about all that's going on out there with the independent mortgage bankers.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Well, it helps if I take the mute button off. Anyway, welcome back to the program. Hope you all had a good Valentine's Day. Alice, did you get yourself? You had the flying Valentine's Day. I sent you out and encouraged you to go out to one of our clients. You were away. Is Andy, your husband, a little upset with me?
Oh, no, not at all. After being married 32 years, you just celebrate Valentine's Day every day is what he keeps telling me.
Oh, I just love it. What a great stuff. Well, one thing that we're not loving is all the regulation that's coming down on us. There's a lot of things where I would imagine got stuck in the snow last week. But let's run through things again real quickly for everybody in our audience.
Yeah, no kidding on the traffic report here for the legislation, because we haven't had any updates because of all the snow. So the snow days going on in Congress have really slowed us down. So traffic's at a stall because of the snow. What we are watching for everybody, just to give you a quick update, we are watching H.R. 4173 still. I mean, it is still sitting out there, the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Having passed the House, you know, a couple of months ago now, we're still watching to see what kind of version is going to come up through the Senate, knowing that there's a lot of feedback out there in Washington to try and get something else, some other idea besides creating another agency. We're also watching H.R. 4461, the Banking Integrity Act of 2010. This is the one that people have called the Volcker Rule, which is basically trying to separate commercial banking from investment banking. Again, no action on any of that right now. And, of course, the too-big-to-fail legislation, H.R. 4516. Now, more importantly, I think what we want to make sure everyone's aware of is the Federal Register information that we're watching, the final and proposed rules. These seem to be really the bigger issues. So we are watching the Truth in Lending proposed rule that we all put comments out there that this is the one that touches on the big changes to ARM program, ARM disclosures, the CHARMS booklet, as well as loan officer addressing compensation based on the terms of the loan. So we're still
big
waiting
issues
to hear back from that. Yeah, I haven't gotten anything back on that. Now, the last thing I guess I want to make sure people are, I think this is kind of funny. You know, the appraisal independence rule from HUD was supposed to go into effect today. I think it's rather funny they put this very big, you know, policy in effect on the day they're not open.
Yes.
I wonder if that was thought out ahead of time on purpose or what. So we really don't know. I'm going to say, you know what, check FHA connection, see if it looks like it has, that the system's been modified. But we're still waiting to hear. We did not get word that there's an extension. So technically appraisals ordered as of today, the broker is not supposed to be placing that order.
Interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting box of chocolates there on the independence. And so, well, let's talk about well, we got so much we're going to talk about with Glenn on the program, Alice. Let's say some of the discussion.
Yep.
Is there anything that we have missed for this update? I'm excited to get Glenn on as we can dive into a lot of the issues that really are made up in the traffic report or all that's going on legislatively. Is there anything else that we have here?
Just some deadlines we want to make sure people are aware of. Upfront MIP, you know, just mark the deadlines on your calendar. The red flags rule is still pushed out to June 1st, and then we have
right.
The upfront MIP due to increase in April. So we'll be keeping you posted as those draw closer.
Yeah, upfront MIP due on tax day, so interesting. April 15th. Can't wait. Good. Thank you so much, Alice. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you back again. This is February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, President's Day. It's appropriate that we have talking with us on the program as a guest, Glenn Corso, someone I've known for many, many years, going way back, Glenn, to your days at the MBA. Glenn is the Managing Director for the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave.
Good to have you here, Glenn. There's a number of things we want to talk about, the risk retention that's pending in the state legislation. Where does it stand, and the industry proposal for the qualified mortgage exemption? Let's get into a discussion about that. I know Alice is going to kick in with some questions on there. Where do you see that at this point?
Well, where it stands right now is, as Alice reported to you, the Senate legislation, the Senate version of the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, is still being discussed. We had a development last week where essentially the chairman of the committee, who's a Democrat, and the ranking Republican, Senator Shelby from Alabama, had been talking and we thought working towards some kind of bipartisan compromise on the entire bill. And then it was announced last week that their talks had sort of broken down. And the report was that it was over the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, which President Obama is a big advocate of. And then late
That's
in the
where
week,
partisanship is really showing up, isn't it?
Right. It is. And then late in the week, there was a report that the second most senior Republican on the committee, Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee, had initiated discussions with Senator Dodd to see if they could work up a bipartisan proposal. So off again, on again kind of thing, you know, but it looks like it's on track. Anyway, risk retention is in the draft of the bill that the Senate committee released last November now, so a number of months ago, and it would be pretty onerous. Some risk retention of 10% could be at the originator level as well as the security issuer level. So
wow.
Big implications for independent mortgage bankers like the companies that I work with, as well as, of course, the big guys, the securities issuers, who would also be impacted by this. And, of course, Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, who are going to feel the effects. Risk retention is going to drive costs up, which will be reflected in higher mortgage interest rates, which, of course, is to nobody's benefit.
That's absolutely. I mean, as I say, the group we're trying to protect, the federal government, these legislators are trying to protect, are the very ones that are going to be hurt by this stuff. Glenn, this is a critical issue for so many of the independent mortgage bankers. For a lot of people that are not familiar with what you're doing, with you and your group, could you give us a little background on what the Community Mortgage Banking Project is all about?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. My partner Pete Mills and I formed this group back in 2009. We had been working with a group of independent mortgage bankers who were experiencing warehouse lending issues. Dave, you and many of your listeners are aware at how tight warehouse credit was last year, and formed a group to try and address those issues. We got to work with a number of independent mortgage banks. Most of the mortgage banks we work with are non-bank affiliated, but we do have several that we work with that are either subsidiaries or affiliates of community banks. We were working with them on the warehouse issue, and they said to us, gee, look, you know, we think the future of our businesses is going to be at stake with what Congress and the administration are going to be doing over the next several years. Would you think about forming a group that would have a broader focus and look at all the issues confronting us? So with the backing of about 35 companies, we have done just that. And so that's what the Community Mortgage Banking Project is, a group of 35 independent companies scattered across the U.S. We have East Coast, West Coast, Southeast, strong contingent from Michigan, another strong contingent from Colorado. Their focus is on the fact that they follow the originate to sell model. They're all mortgage bankers, so they have warehouse lines and closed loans in their own name. And either a smaller number of them are either Ginnie Mae issuers or they issue Fannie or Freddie securities. Larger number of them sell to big aggregators, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, etc., and sell those loans servicing released, and of course then they end up in Ginnie Mae securities or with Fannie and Freddie.
And the fact that these guys are as leveraged out as far as they already are, many of them have skin in the game because they're personally guaranteeing the warehouse lines during the time that the loan is sitting on that line. In addition to that, they have the repurchase risk if there's anything that's wrong with those loans or deemed wrong with those loans, whether it is or there's something wrong or not. They're sitting there dealing with the consequence of this. So they're already got so much skin in the game, Glenn. How does this risk retention worsen the situation, I guess, for lack of a better word?
Well, we have actually some very good examples that we've developed that we share up on Capitol Hill. We talk, for instance, about the typical company that, let's say, they originate $1 billion of loans a year. Now, at a 10% risk retention level, that's an additional $100 million, presumably in capital, that they'd have to find somewhere in order to support the loans that they produce in a single year for as long as those loans are outstanding. Now, that
wow.
is capital that otherwise, you know, is kind of sitting there. They can invest it, obviously, in something very safe like treasury bills or something like that. But essentially, it's non-productive, and it's an enormous burden. And, of course, the fact that they've got to meet that is going to get reflected in the rates that they charge Mr. and Mrs. Consumer for the mortgages that they obtain. And
well,
if you think about it, even though the big guys, Bank of America, Wells, et cetera, have a lower cost of funding, they're going to have that same capital issue where all of a sudden they have to devote a tremendous amount more capital to the mortgage business that they do, and that's going to get reflected in their prices as well.
The fact that everyone thinks, well, this is not going to affect the big guys, it's going to have an impact on them. It may not have as sudden impact as it is on the more thinly capitalized independent mortgage bankers. One of the things, Glenn, you and I both work with some of the same groups out there. I want to call out one particular name because he should be used as a positive example of what can be done. A guy by the name of Mark Walker, president of Michigan Mutual, out there in Michigan, along with four of his competitors, and came together and met, and I got to be privileged to be in that meeting early January, Senator Blevins' office. We went in there and sat down and talked to one of the staffers. And it was not friendly territory. Let's just put it that way. It didn't feel friendly. And then the group followed up, and Glenn, you led a group of them into Washington, D.C., and I know that's probably one of the less friendly meetings you had go on. But I think it's so important that we talk about the importance of doing what Mark, which I think is so exemplary for what everyone needs to be doing, needs to, you know, what we can do to impact this. And you may feel like you're running into a brick wall like they did with Senator Blevins, both in his own district, in his own area, as well as what you guys ran into in Washington, D.C. But let's talk about that, Glenn. Is it, even though you feel like you're running against, it's impossible, you're running against the proverbial brick wall, is it still worth it to get involved?
Oh, Dave, I tell the mortgage bankers I work with, there is just absolutely no substitute whatsoever. Think about it. You've got these senators and representatives in Washington, they hear from professional lobbyists day in and day out, from the trade associations, big corporations, et cetera, et cetera. It makes an impact on them when a small business owner, because in the end, that's what most independent mortgage bankers are, small businesses, a small business owner comes in and says, look, this particular provision that you're considering, here's the impact it's going to have, not just on my business, but on the people that I serve. You know, I have made X number of loans, whatever that number is, to constituents that live in your congressional district, to people who live in your state, to allow them to buy a home or refinance their existing mortgage. This is how it's going to impact them. It's going to affect my business, but it's going to, in the end, affect the people who go to the voting booth and are going to
yep.
decide whether or not to extend your stay in Washington.
Well, I think the reality is what was stunning to me when I sat there and listened to Mark and the Tim Ross, and I think it was also Mark Jones, and there was another gentleman, his name escapes me at the moment, that sat there and listened and presented the case to Senator Blevins' senior staff there that was listening. I don't want to mention her name. It was just astounding to me, the lack of grasp of the issues. But the fact that these four guys came together, it had an impact. And I just want to encourage you that are listeners out there saying, you know what, I thought that's what our PACs were for. You know what, this is serious enough and this is important enough. The political action committees are there, yes, but you know what, you need to have your voice heard as these gentlemen were. These guys should get MVP awards for what they're doing out there because they're doing it on their own nickel, Glenn. And I want to talk about the Community Mortgage Banking Project. You guys are not lobbyists. You're there to help facilitate that. That's just one component of what you're doing. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. The other thing that we're doing is really threefold. The first is analysis of legislation, advising the mortgage bankers we work with. Here's what's in the bill. Here's how we think it's going to affect the business. We then discuss it with them to make sure that, you know, we understand how it impacts the business. Second thing is communication. Communication both externally as well as back to the membership. And then the final piece is the advocacy piece. For instance, we had one of our members who is a very prominent mortgage banker, Robert Eustace, in New Orleans. We worked with him to develop an op-ed article that he wrote that the New Orleans Times-Picayune, the main paper in New Orleans, agreed to run. It was about risk retention. And we had to make sure that the article really talked to Mr. and Mrs. Consumer about here's the impact on you, rather than making it a highly technical piece that only people in the industry would be able to understand. And so that was successful, and now we have several other members who have come to us and said, gee, can you do work with me so I can write something that can communicate to the consumers I serve through the newspapers in my area.
Hey, Glenn, this is Alice. I wanted to jump in on that to reiterate how critical it is that you get out to the press before the other side does, and for them to see both sides. I think that's tremendous.
Right. No, it's absolutely essential because, you know, people are forming impressions, making decisions. They need to have all the facts and need to hear both sides before they get to that point.
Right.
Joe, I think what you and I were talking about this, and Alice and I were talking about this before the program, you've done your share of lobbying and getting involved there. Joe, do you think it makes any difference to these guys, or should they get involved?
No question. I mean, it's a constituent, number one, and two, they are also employers of many of those constituents. So, you know, when Glenn was saying what's going to do to your business, it's also, especially in this environment, what's it going to do to the number of employees I have or I might be able to employ in the future if things like this get passed. So it pays greatly to be there personally as well as to be representing more than just yourself in that community.
It does so much more. Isn't there a statement out there, a saying, Glenn, that goes something like one personal visit from a constituent is worth 100 lobbyist visits? I'm not sure if that's true or something like that. But it does. It's hard to imagine the effect of you showing up there and the cost. You look at how much money I've written to checks I've written to the lobbyists and the PAC organizations, and all of which are good. Don't begrudge that for a minute. But the fact of you being able to be well advised by you and your group, Glenn, and then being able to sit in front of my senator, it just, you know, all of a sudden you really feel government can and does work. It doesn't always feel like it when you're running into Senator Blevins' office a little bit, but it can work. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk about FDIC regulations on securitizations. We're also going to get into the HUD SAFE Act. I really want Joe and Alice to jump in on this. We'll be right back after this
mortgage
brief
banking
break.
Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending. Glenn, let's talk about FDIC regulations on securitizations and how the draft regulations show the regulators' attitudes towards mortgage banking securitizations. Give us a little insights into, from an independent mortgage banker standpoint and the small community banker, how does this impact them?
Well, here's how it impacts them. This is actually a very technical issue, but what it's done is it's really given us an insight as to the FDIC's thinking on securitizations, and it's not positive. The FDIC has rules in place right now that essentially give a roadmap to banks that want to do a mortgage securitization. And they tell the banks, if you do it in this way, if in fact the bank gets to a point where it fails and it goes into receivership, we, the FDIC, will come in and we'll look at this securitization. As long as you follow these rules, we'll say to the security holders, okay, this was an appropriately done securitization. We're not going to disturb it. We're not going to put it aside. We're not going to grab the mortgages and claim that, you know, they're now the receiver's property. Obviously, that's a key issue for mortgage
right.
security investors. Well, what the FDIC has done is that they've proposed a whole set of rules where essentially they say, okay, in addition to following this roadmap, here's this whole other set of rules that you're going to have to follow for us to, you know, not touch this securitization in the event of a bank failure, including saying the issuer and the underwriter and potentially the originators can't get all of their fees paid right up front when the security is issued, that the bank has to hold the loans on their book for 12 months, so they all have to be seasoned mortgages before they can be put into a security. And then the bank has to retain at least 5% of the risk. You go through this whole long laundry list of things that they're suggesting, and you think to yourself, well, what does this have to do with determining the legal issue of whether or not the security was properly done, and therefore the receiver shouldn't overturn it? And
right.
the FDIC is basically trying to shoehorn their views into this very narrow technical regulation. But what it shows us is, as I was explaining before, the House bill on risk retention leaves a lot of discretion to the regulators to determine and shape what the risk retention requirements are going to be. This gives us an insight as to what we're likely to see from the regulators if they're in fact given that sweeping authority by Congress, and it's not a pretty picture, Dave.
But Glenn, don't they normally float out those? When you talk about a draft regulation, in a sense, it is being presented out there for feedback.
It is. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. No. No. So it's not. I'm just saying that it. We've been talking on Capitol Hill, and you know, we've been getting some feedback saying, well, don't worry, Congress isn't going to just jam this down your throat. We're going to leave it to the regulators. And now we're looking at the way the regulators might approach this.
Well, to your point, Glenn, I think is what's going on is we're seeing a climate. And that's what you're saying here, is that
right.
if we don't speak up, if we don't get involved, if you as the independent mortgage banker or a small community banker are not getting involved with projects like the Community Mortgage Banking Project, we're going to see this come. And the nature, undisturbed, unchallenged, is not good. Joe, you used to be a part of a banking institution, a bank here in Austin. What's your views on this?
Well, we talked, I think, a couple of weeks ago on the show about the different messages being sent, one by the administration saying, get out and lend. This was especially as it related to small business lending. Get out and lend, get out and lend. And then you have the regulators on the back end saying, if you make any more of those loans, we're gonna make you hold more reserves. So it's a little bit like, the messages are mixed, and all that we've talked about today is going to withdraw funds from the marketplace. It's going to make lending or
That's
borrowing more expensive, and none of that can be helpful to the marketplace. But I had one specific question for Glenn as it relates to risk retention, and just to see what the likelihood of getting this qualified mortgage exemption is. Do you have a sense? And from that, what that means to me is that loans that are ordinarily qualifying to go into a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security would have some either no risk retention or a lesser amount of risk retention?
Yeah, Joe, that's a great question. My group has banded together with several other lender organizations, including the MBA and the Housing Policy Council, to say to Congress, look, we know that there are certain types of mortgages, and they're not just mortgages that go to the GSEs or our FHA, VA, but they're also mortgages, jumbo mortgages, for example, that are, you know, aren't agency eligible, that if they are a fixed rate, fully amortizing kind of loan, or if they're fully amortizing and they're an ARM with, you know, caps, you know, annually and lifetime, and fully underwritten, fully documented, certain type of, you know, back-end debt-to-income ratio, et cetera, that these loans are very safe, they perform well as an investment, and they're safe and affordable for borrowers, there shouldn't be any risk retention on these. These are people who make a down payment, they fully document their income and their assets. Why should they be penalized for the loans that they want to get? And so we're hopeful that, in fact, Congress will accept that. We got a little bit in the House, but not very much. We've gotten a better reception in the Senate. We're talking to the members of the Senate Banking Committee right now. Several of them have expressed a great deal of interest in this idea. So we're cautiously optimistic that that'll end up in the legislation.
Glenn, do you see that they might?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Glenn. I was just going to say, Glenn, do you see that they might even go to the point of making it as easy as you get an approve eligible from automated underwriting, or do you really see that it would get to that level of minutia? Is what's the credit score, what's the DTI to try and identify a qualified mortgage that's exempt?
Well, Alice, I don't think it's going to get to quite that level, because remember, when we bring those issues up with Congress, they say, well, gee, how do you know where the GSEs
yeah,
are going to be in a few years?
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, I know Joe mentioned before an agency-eligible loan. That's why we haven't tied it to the agencies. We've tied the definition to certain both underwriting standards and certain concepts, you know, fully documented, the borrower has to make a down payment, that sort of thing. So I don't think it's going to get quite to that level. What we're trying to do is get Congress to say to the regulators, you must create a category of qualified mortgages that are exempt from risk retention, and these are the characteristics that those qualified mortgages should have. So there'll be some details that the regulators can fill in, but the regulators won't be free to sort of dream up their own ideas about what should or shouldn't be a qualified mortgage.
Do you envision there may be a tier of sorts, you know, the, or just in or out?
I think it's going to be just in or out, because unfortunately, when you're writing legislation, it usually works better and is more clear to make it an in or out kind of thing. You know, it's is it A or is it B? If it's B,
yeah,
it's out. That sort
right.
of thing.
Well, you know, it's all fascinating. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about the HUD SAFE and SAFE Act regulations. We're going to talk about the possibility that we're going to see a resurgence in repurchase demands. We're going to talk about that, and we'll be right back right after this break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzelschrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzelschrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzelschrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzelschrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzelschrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzelschrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
Hey
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
We're fortunate again to have Glenn Corso, who is the Managing Director of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Glenn, so good to have you on here. Let's talk about the HUD SAFE Act regulation. How does this impact the independent mortgage banker?
Well, Dave, as many of your listeners know, the SAFE Act, in essence, puts HUD as the backup regulator to the state,
yeah.
The backup regulator for independent mortgage companies. HUD has to determine whether or not each state has taken the action necessary under the SAFE Act to be a qualified regulator, and if so, then HUD steps back. But if HUD determines that a state hasn't stepped up or that they've stepped up but it's inadequate, then HUD becomes the regulator in that particular state. HUD published regulations in December. Comment period will be early March. I think March, it's just been extended to March 5th, on the regulations that they're going to use to implement their responsibilities under the SAFE Act. I think the things that have caught people's attention so far are, number one, HUD is indicating that they believe that many of the activities that servicing personnel are undertaking on the loan modification front require them to become licensed loan originators, which is really catching many people
yep.
in the industry by surprise.
Well, so many state laws. Yeah, I was just going to say a lot of state
yeah.
laws have picked up on that as well. Yeah.
Right, and unfortunately, what this is doing is I think there's a dividing line between are you modifying an existing mortgage, so you're modifying certain terms in an existing mortgage, but at the end of the day, that mortgage really stays in place, or are you taking action such that you really have a new loan? I think if you really have a new loan, then it's pretty clear that you're undertaking origination activities, and you're going to have to be licensed for that. But if you're modifying the terms of an existing mortgage so that existing loan stays in place, I think there's a lot of people who feel, myself included, that the SAFE Act really doesn't cover that activity. Anyway, that's probably one big item. The second item, which is, it's a small thing, but yet I think it's going to cause originators a lot of hair pulling, is that HUD defines mortgage application to mean any request from a consumer that they are in essence want to make an application for a loan. So you read the definition and you go, oh my
yep.
gosh, you think about all the contacts you get from consumers that could constitute an application, and it can become a real nightmare. So I think there's
yep.
going to be a lot of comments on that to HUD to say, gee, guys, let's get real here. And,
let's make it consistent. Yeah.
Yeah,
make it
exactly
consistent
right.
with other regulations. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Alice, go ahead, Alice. I just said, you've been tracking a lot of this. And reading also some of the comments that are coming in, have you not?
Well, on this particular one, we've only just started looking, because the comment period, like Glenn said, was just recently extended. It was going to expire actually tomorrow. But as a matter of fact, it has another piece in it that I think is very interesting. So you've got this piece of HUD's oversight and when is a loan modification and should those people be licensed, but you also have that they're encouraging financial institutions in general to have their loan officers subject to the state licensing requirements. And we've gotten many a call from credit unions and community banks who are going, well, wait a minute, when do I have to do this? Do I have to do this yet? And I said, call your congressman, and this is still up for comment. This is something that is still a negotiation. HUD's looking for everyone's responses.
Right. That's exactly right. I think the third item, Dave, that I'd just like to point out to your listeners is with credit scores.
Yes.
The SAFE Act authorizes states to pull credit reports on applicants for licenses, for originator licenses.
That has not been getting a lot of attention. That is
right.
That should be bringing up a lot of concern for a lot of reasons on a lot of fronts, more than just the mortgage industry.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, the states have taken it a step further, and there's a number of states now, you guys are as aware of this as I am, that have actually said, that have actually imposed FICO score minimums for loan officer applicants. And we think, and you know, my organization is going to be commenting to HUD, that they should make it quite clear that the law really doesn't require the states to do that. And in fact, that may not be a very good idea. Just because you have an originator who's run into some financial difficulty of their own for, you know, beyond their control, doesn't mean that, that therefore they shouldn't be able to become an originator and continue in their profession.
Well, I'll tell you, Glenn, though, the hard part about that is, you know, in Michigan, for example, they came up with just gray wording about, you know, trying to define a loan officer who has an acceptable financial background without stating a score. And then you get into a lot of subjectivity, and you need very detailed guidance from them, because it's hard to say to a loan officer, basically your license is being treated like a credit application, and write a really good credit explanation, and some will fly and some won't. You know, so I think they look at score as being a way to make a definitive number so that it's a way to be consistent. I know it's not what you want, but it's hard to define it otherwise.
Right, right. Well, that's true. And then you have states, for example, that are also have taken it two steps further and are now requiring a minimum level of personal net worth for applicants. And you think to yourself,
yes,
well, my gosh, how is somebody straight out of college ever going to become a loan originator
right,
if they graduate with some student debt and very little or no assets?
Yeah, that one doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are not making sense in this whole discussion, and I want to move to another topic other than just to say I'm really concerned about overall capacity for our industry. If we're ever going to have a recovery, and housing will lead us out of this recession, there's no question about that. But the number one thing is that capacity just continues to take one blow after another. And if we do all of the things that we've talked about in this program, that they instigate this legislation, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where not a lot of people or consumers are going to find it increasingly more difficult to get their to find it a loan officer to sit down to take their application. Let's move on to the last topic. We just got about 8 minutes for the program today. I want to talk about announcement that came out on February 10th by Freddie Mac that said they're starting to buy substantial amounts of loans out of securities that have gone delinquent. And if they're buying them back out of securities, Glenn, and Alice found this article, I'd love to get your thoughts on it. This is going to have another round of buybacks thrust back down to those that originated these loans. And even for the aggregators like the Wells Fargo's, the B of A's, if they put them into securitization, it's going to go right through down into the independent mortgage banker. This is a concerning report. Do you anticipate seeing a resurgence of the number of repurchase demands being put out on the originators?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do. Freddie Mac made the announcement. Fannie Mae did as well, but Fannie Mae's schedule is a bit more extended than Freddie's is. Freddie is proposes to
fairly
be
aggressive.
Pretty aggressive. Yeah. And so the independent mortgage bankers we've been working with have been increasingly expressing their concerns about the buyback requests that they're getting, also the mortgage insurance rescissions that they're getting as well, you know, policy rescissions. And oftentimes if they've sold to an aggregator, as you mentioned, Dave, what happens is, of course, that the aggregator initially gets the buyback demand from Fannie or Freddie, or they get the rescission from the mortgage insurance company, and then they turn right around to the correspondent and they say, "Hey, Mr. Correspondent, here you go. Here's your loan back."
And then
you have a very tough situation because the aggregator is in the middle between the real two interested parties, which is either the GSE, the mortgage insurer on one hand, and the correspondent on the other.
Joe, we're going to see this have an impact on also, again, on pricing and how it's going to impact the capacity issues. And how do you see this, Joe, affecting the secondary markets? Is this going to have a direct impact on rates?
There are very few. You know, it's nice that the government guarantees these loans, so you take away the credit risk factor, but you still have the factor of when am I going to get paid back. and how much, if I pay over par, how much time do I need to earn interest on this loan at this rate in order to recover my premium price? And what we're seeing is that those people that had investments at big premiums over par just got took a big loss. I mean, the loans get bought out at par, and if you own them at a premium, then you've lost your premium. But I think it's just throughout the conversation today, we've talked about all the things that seem to be bringing an assault on the mortgage-backed security as a way of funding loans. And I just throw out there that without mortgage-backed securities, we don't have a fixed-rate loan market. And for the consumers out there, if you like the security of a fixed-rate loan, we need this form of investment at reasonable prices, and granted that involves a government guarantee, but it also involves reasonable rules about retention, risk retention, if at all, and reasonable rules about removing loans from pools and putting and considering parts of general assets of the company, like Glenn brought up. So, I think we need to protect this as a fixed rate vehicle for customers out there that like the security of those kinds of loans.
I got a phone call from one of the reporters from American Banker while I was traveling home from New York on Friday afternoon and heading off to the airport, about ready to board my plane, and we were talking about the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And Glenn, this kind of has a flavor of, they're in this survival game, and which one's going to survive. How much do you think plays into this article that Allison, thank you so much for Alice for finding this article and sharing it with us. Appreciate it. But how much, Glenn, do you think this is going to play into, or what we're reading here is playing into a desperate act to survive?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it so much a desperate act to survive as the fact that both Fannie and Freddie are well aware that they depend on the U.S. Treasury lifeline to maintain their net worth, and that if those organizations want to continue into the future, that the extent to which they can minimize the losses that they're going to present to the Treasury Department, the greater the chances for success. Whereas if it becomes a perception in the government or in Congress, gosh, that they're just draining us of capital to no end, then the future looks a lot less a lot less rosy for them. So I wouldn't characterize it as desperate, but kind of a prudent move to try and cut those losses as best they can.
That's a good characterization. I think I use the word desperate because I've heard several people refer to it as they're reading into the stories about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is that there's some desperate attempts on their part to stay alive, and they're getting more aggressive to show the federal government that owns them, I guess we all own them, that they're trying to do their part to to want that they should be able to continue on and that they can do a good job of managing their risk. Next week we've got on with us Mercy Jimenez, and I'm thrilled to have her on again as we are, Glenn, having you here. Would love to have your feedback in for all of you. For those of you who are listening, email us the questions you want to get off to him. Mercy, she too, is just like Glenn, is coming back by popular demand. There's a lot of people that sent us comments about her focus right now, which is the covered bonds. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us. Glenn, how can the people get a hold of you? Give us your email and give us your phone number real quick.
Well, sure, yeah. It's Glenn, G-L-E-N, .Corso at mbinitiatives.com. And phone number is 571-357-1036.
Very good, folks. Thank you so much for being a part of us. We look forward to having you tune in next week. Glenn, thank you for being a part on the program. Thank you. This is Lickin' on Lending.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Sorry for the rush. You have to exit here, guys.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from M.